And welcome to Wine About Wine. My name is Earl Ray Neal, and as always, with me, it's Dr. Serge, the wine guy. How are you doing, Dr. Serge?
I am doing well.
All right. We are very excited to have you on this edition of Wine About Wine, where every bottle of wine has a story and every story is a memory. We have a very special guest today, so I'm going to have Serge introduce our guest, and we'll get right to it.
Thank you, Earl Ray. Well, today we have Matt Whelan with Fullerton Wines out of Oregon. Welcome, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing very well today. Thanks for having me.
We are so excited to have you here. We've been selling your wine now for, I guess it's a little over a year. And what has always been exciting to us is the story behind Fullerton. And I just can't wait to share with everybody some of the background about Fullerton. So, Matt, if you just give us a quick rundown about yourself and about Fullerton and its background.
Yeah, absolutely. I personally started with Fullerton Wines in 2015. I was the first employee outside of the family. This is a husband and wife and their son, Alex Fullerton. Alex is the winemaker. And they decided to open a winery together in 2012. So we were a relatively young winery. But the backstory is quite fascinating. I'll start with 1969, which is really where Fullerton Wines originates. So the family is Danish. They moved to the United States in the late 90s. So been here just over 20 years. And when they lived abroad or lived in Denmark, they spent a lot of time touring around wine country. This passion for wine really originates to when Eric Fullerton, our winemaker, Alex's dad, when he was 14 years old. He was on a summer road trip in 1969 with his grandparents, 14 years old, and they pulled over in a vineyard on the Rhine River in Germany. And this woman comes out of the vines, as Eric remembers it. She has gnarly hair, teeth going different directions, and gives his grandparents a big old hug. Eric kind of turns his head to the side and says, "What's going on here? Who's this woman?" She turns to him, tussles his hair, and says, "You look just like Brody." Brody is Eric's mother, who wasn't along on this summer road trip. And then this woman gives Eric a big old hug after saying he looks just like his mother. This woman's name is Annie. She owned this vineyard, and she is a German Jew who fled Nazi-occupied Germany and fled north through Denmark. While fleeing north, outside of Copenhagen, Eric's grandparents ran a boarding school. This was their career. The boarding school was outside of Copenhagen, had quite a property, including a church. And on this property, they smuggled dozens of German Jews through the fields of Denmark, north into Sweden, where it was a bit safer. So Annie spent about 2 weeks in the basement of the church property of the boarding school. And Brody, Eric's mother, was a young gal back in the 1940s of World War II. She was just, maybe 10 herself. And she was going to church to go to voice lessons and choir practice. And she was the one who would sneak food into the basement to everybody who was hiding out in the basement. So in 1969, when Annie gives Eric a hug and says, "You look just like your mother, Brody," this was the 10-year-old Brody she's referencing, delivering food as kind of a lifeline. Annie made it safely to Sweden. I should add that around Copenhagen, this was Nazi occupied at the time in the 40s. So this was pretty risky business to be smuggling folks through their boarding school property. So 1969, Eric meets Annie. He's kind of blown away by this history that he really hadn't learned much about yet from his family, and then went to work for Annie that fall. He got a tour that summer of the vineyard, the winery, and then they hired him that fall to work both in the vineyard and kind of a harvest hand. Eric was 14 years old. They put him to work hard. Vineyard work and wine work is laborious. And you give all the kind of dirty, crummy jobs to the 14-year-old to do the backbreaking stuff. So he certainly didn't have a you know, it was hard work, and I don't know that he necessarily enjoyed every second of that, but it was his introduction to wine, and that introduction stuck with him in a big way. And he's had, Eric Fullerton has had his fingers in wine in different ways throughout his whole life, even though his career has never involved wine until they started Fullerton Wines in 2012.
So Matt, one of the things that has always interested me is the approach that the individual winemaker has as it relates to the harvesting of the grapes and the production of the wine. Can you tell us a little bit about what farming process Fullerton uses and what your all's approach is with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So Alex Fullerton has both his viticulture and enology degrees, so wine growing and winemaking. He's interested in both sides of that equation. We do have a very small estate that we farm ourselves, and then we work with about a dozen other growers around the valley. All of our growers farm to our standards in our blocks. It's kind of like a lease, essentially, of a block or two that they farm according to our standards, which at a minimum, all of our vineyards are sustainably certified. Some are organically farmed. We call it handshake organics. Lots of times, because they're only 5 or 10 acre property, they don't actually get certified organic because the certification process is time consuming and costs some money. And if you only have 5 or 10 acres, it may not make sense. Our estate vineyard is organically farmed without certification also, because it's quite small, just a few acres. And we actually practice some of the biodynamic preps on the vineyard as well, even though we're not biodynamically certified, but we certainly farm with very little intervention, so much so that we actually don't till. A lot of organic farmers will till to kind of cut back on weeds. We use no-till, partially because the spacing doesn't allow for it, and the hillside's pretty steep for our little estate, and partially because there's some science to support that tillage breaks up kind of the microbiology in the surface in that first, that top foot of soil. And that microbiology in that top foot, many believe, and I agree with the science that's showing that the terroir of land really comes in that first top foot or so. All vine growth going deeper than that to pull up water isn't really translating the terroir as much as just pulling water up from deep down below. So we're a no-till, minimal intervention farmers. On the winemaking side of things, Alex serves, I would say, a guide on the side in the winemaking process. There are some winemakers, maybe you're familiar with the natural wine movement right now, that's kind of catching a lot of people, especially in the major cities around the globe. That natural wine movement is kind of a pushback against corporate wine, which I would call... I call it Coca-Cola wine, essentially. Wine that's meant to hit a very specific taste profile, and you're gonna add and subtract and do whatever you need to that wine to taste the same way every year. And as a pushback to that, there's a movement that's the natural wine movement, which is to do nothing, essentially, or very little. Let the wine will ferment naturally. Don't mess with it. Let it translate the place. We don't call ourselves natural winemakers at Fullerton Wines. And I should add, I help in the cellar a little just for harvest every year. So I have my hands in the grapes a bit myself. We definitely play a role in the winemaking at Fullerton Wines, but we try to make that role as minimal as possible. We use native yeasts in 99% of our ferments. That means the yeast floating through the winery or anything that happens to be on the grapes is what's doing the fermentation. We're not pitching yeast that we buy commercially. We're not using additives. Like there are dozens of things that you can add into a wine to change the flavor profile of wines. And we are pretty hands-off in what we're adding. But we are paying attention closely, and we will use low levels of sulfur dioxide and some other, sulfur dioxide is a very common one to prevent spoilage, basically. It prevents oxidation and biological growth that you don't want in the wine, basically. And we try to use that in small levels, low levels, just enough to protect the wine without kind of clobbering the wine.
So Matt and Serge, we've got a couple of minutes left with our listeners. If you could spend that time maybe highlighting us a few of the wines that you all offer and tell us about the individual characteristics of the wine and maybe what your best sellers are. And if somebody is looking to try a Fullerton wine, you know, where should they start?
I'll jump in here to start out. Yeah. So we are Fullerton Wines. One thing that's intriguing about our company is that we have a second label called Three Otters. So Fullerton's the main label, Three Otters is the second label. Alex Fullerton has his family crest tattooed on his arm, and there's three otters on the center of their 700-year-old family crest. So our Three Otters label is a little playful nod, a little paying homage playfully to that family crest. And I adore our Three Otters wines. You find them around $20, $22, $24 on retail shelves, which for boutique wines made at only 400, 600, 1,000 cases per wine is a very fair tariff. And we're incredibly proud of the wines that we produce under the Three Otters label. I would say the Three Otters Pinot Noir, 2017 is the current vintage right now, is a stunning value. It tastes like Willamette Valley Pinot Noir. A lot of wines at that price point can be a little more manipulated, going back to that kind of corporate wine conversation. And this is authentic Willamette Valley Pinot Noir that looks like Pinot Noir and I think has some great complexity for that $20 price point. I would then jump to the Fullerton label. We make a Five Faces Pinot Noir, which is essentially our middle tier price point in the mid-30s. Also, just a few hundred cases made every year. Here we get some new French oak involved in the winemaking, and also it's from a couple of our best vineyards we work with. I think the Three Otters Pinot Noir, the Five Faces Pinot Noir, if you could taste those two side by side, are a stellar introduction to our winemaking at two very fair price points, considering the size of our winery that's just making a few thousand cases a year.
Yeah, and that was going to be my my question to you, Matt. And a lot of people don't realize just how boutique-y you are. You know, as we're talking about these corporate wine makers, but these are family. This is a family. A family making wine. And how many cases a year do you all make total?
We're between 6,000 and 8,000 recently. 4,000 one year recently. Bops around 6,000 yep. recently.
And I think that is so hands on. There just aren't a lot of that level of quality and sophistication and boutique-y. Just wonderful stuff. So we've enjoyed having them.
Matt, we sincerely appreciate you spending some time with us today and telling us about Fullerton Wines. I can say, from my perspective, that this has been by far the best edition of Wine About Wine. I have learned quite a bit. I'm excited for our listeners to try your wine if they already haven't. And this is why we do this. As I said earlier, every bottle of wine has a story, and you guys have a great story. And we really appreciate you spending the time with us today. And we're excited to help you get the word out about Fullerton Wines. Thank you very much. That'll wrap it up for us on this edition of Wine About Wine. Please visit us at pastaandvino.com for Italian recipes, wines, food, things of that nature. We appreciate your time and pass it along to your friends if you have enjoyed our podcast. Have a great day.